I want women to do like what Lady Gaga did to Liza Minnelli at the Oscars a few years ago. She said, I got you. Like, I want you to say to your future self, I got you. Don't worry. I'm going to make sure you are healthy enough. I'm going to make sure you are financially secure enough. I'm going to make sure I've got your back.
Hey, midlifers. Welcome to the Midlife Makeover Show. Are you ready to break free from your mundane midlife? Are you feeling trapped in a vicious cycle of rinse and repeat days? No matter if you're experiencing a divorce hangover, job burnout, or you just have the midlife blues, I got you. Hey, I'm Wendy, your hostess of the Midlife Mostess. I too was hit by midlife like a freight train. I too felt stuck in the same dull chapter. I wanted the clarity of how to create a new life beyond divorce and the courage to leave an unfulfilling career. But I kept telling myself that I wasn't worthy and it was just easier to stay in my comfort zone until I found a little secret, the freedom to live my life my way. In this podcast, you will learn how to achieve a vibrant midlife mind and body, how to create solid relationships through love and loss, and how to create an awesome second half of life. Grab your grande latte, pop in your earbuds, and let's get this midlife party started. Do you ask yourself questions like, who am I? What is my purpose? Why am I living a life I don't love? Answers to these questions and more are revealed in the new Freedom at Midlife group coaching program, where I offer you a guaranteed roadmap to your own midlife makeover. In this powerful 7-week program, you will learn the 7 steps to freedom method to help you discover who you want to become, what life you want to live, and most importantly, how to get there. Instead of being lost in life, miserable in menopause, or struggling to juggle it all, you could reignite your love life, retire that dreadful job, and reinvent yourself. So, if you're ready to begin your midlife journey of transformation, filled with accountability, guidance, and support, then the time is now. Your midlife needs you to make a move. The Freedom at Midlife program is opening for enrollment soon, with limited spots available. To be the first to know when we are open for enrollment, please join the waitlist now at freedomatmidlife.com, and you will soon discover that next courageous step in creating your epic second half of life.
Welcome to the Midlife Makeover Show, the podcast where we challenge the norms, silence the stereotypes, and help you explore what it truly means to live your most authentic life. This isn't just about getting by. Oh, no, no, no. It's about defining what you truly want your life to look like, despite what society says it's supposed to be. So ask yourself, what do I want it to look like? In today's episode, we're diving deep into how women are rewriting the narrative on aging and relationships. And to help us unpack all this, we have an incredible guest with us. Joining me today is Vicki Larson, an award-winning journalist whose insightful writing has graced the pages of the New York Times, The Guardian, The Washington Post, and Newsweek, among others. Vicki is also the author of Not Too Old for That, How Women Are Changing the Story of Aging, hailed as a best book of 2022 by Take the Lead. She co-authored The New I Do, Reshaping Marriage for Skeptics, Realists, and Rebels, a game changer named a best book of 2014 by PopSugar. And keep an eye out for her upcoming book, Latitude, How You Can Make a Live Apart Together Relationship Work, set to hit the shelves on July 9th. I will definitely add that to my Amazon store. Get ready for a thought-provoking discussion that might just hopefully inspire you to reshape your own midlife journey. Please welcome Vicki to the show. Dun, dun, dun.
Hey, Wendy, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me on your wonderful
podcast. We're going to have a great chat.
Yeah, totally. We are.
And it's so needed. Like, I feel like more women, podcast or not, need to be having these conversations.
You know, I wish there were such a thing as podcasts when I was younger, you know, so I feel a little like pimped by that, but I'm so happy to see all of these wonderful podcasts, women really talking about what matters to them, what has not been paid attention to, how they want to live their life with intention and purpose. And, you know, it really feels like, yeah, okay, we're like coming into our own
as
women and as, you know, on podcasts.
Tell me about a little bit more, if you don't mind, let's get personal.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about your personal story. What inspired you to kind of, usually, I mean, for all the people that I've interviewed, I have found that we are our own guinea pigs. And usually what we're teaching, it's because it's what we have learned and what we have experienced our own life. So you might be the first that maybe that's not true, but what has inspired you to kind of gravitate towards this women's empowerment, making your life your own, your journey, and really thinking more from your heart and your soul and making your life, living your life your way? There you go.
Well, okay, I joke with my former husband, who is my second husband. I say, thank you for marrying me so I could divorce you, so I could write a book about marriage. I would not have been an author if I had not gotten divorced, which I know sounds crazy, but it is after that second divorce at midlife, 48, with two kids, 9 and 12, it was the first time I ever really started to think and read critically about things like marriage and things like divorce and love and relationships and the stories we're told and how it actually feels. And it's the first time in my life that I asked myself, Vicky, what do you really want in your life? What is your most authentic life? And, you know, I had a deep conversation with my mom, who was alive then. I said, did you like being a wife? And did you like be a mother? And what did you regret? And, you know, what would you have done differently? And, you know, this was a hard conversation with my mom. My mom was a Holocaust survivor.
Oh, wow.
Who spent her 4 years, 12 to 16. And so went from her home to a concentration camp, to a displaced person camp, to live with an aunt, to live with another aunt, to get married, and had never lived alone. And at midlife, blew it all up and moved to Florida and got a condo and got a job and had a life of her own. And she and my dad lived apart together for 10 years. And then I said to her, like, Mom, you know, it wasn't until I was 48 that I said, Mom, what the heck was that about? And she said, I had enough. And I'll tell you, after at that point, many years of being a wife and a mother myself, I knew exactly what she meant. So midlife hit me big. But it was really because of that second divorce, which is crazy. But I'm in a way, I'm happy.
You and I have a lot in common because the same thing happened to me because I went through my second divorce at 45 years old. And, you know, it's interesting because it was actually a very healthy divorce of any divorce that could be right. Like it was like, okay, we got to do this. And he's a really, really good man. He's a really, really good father. But I realized it was not the fit for me, that I could not be authentic Wendy and live the life that I wanted to live.
Yeah.
By staying in that marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like we had similar because we mediated, we lived close to each other. We gathered for our kids. I mean, it was a conscious uncoupling.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I know. Us too. The same thing.
Well, so, you know, once you have kids together, you're forever bound. And you got to put your big girl panties on, act like the adults in the room for your kids' sake, right?
Yep.
And now for your own mental health, too. Yeah.
What were some of your top lessons learned during your divorce?
From the divorce process?
Mm-hmm. Or just the divorce in general, like the whole breakdown of that. And what did you learn about yourself, your life, your relationships?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we were doing couples counseling and that really wasn't going anywhere. Like a big, he had a long-term affair. Mm. And that did not cause the divorce, but that was the slap in the face that woke Vicky up.
Yeah.
And so we did couples counseling and it wasn't really going anywhere as far as I could tell. And so I said, look, you know, I'm going to delve into my family of origin issues because certainly my parents were not really dysfunctional or anything. I had a pretty good childhood, but the fact that my mother was a Holocaust survivor did impact me. Mm-hmm. And because I wanted to be I was very protective of her and I became a people pleaser. So I didn't really know all of that until I really delved into some deep therapy on my own and got my act together. And I had, you know, vision of like, okay, this is all led me to here and I don't want to do that again. And so, and I couldn't really stay married to him and do that. So becoming very self-reflective and trying to it would have been so easy, Wendy, for me to just point the finger at him and say, oh, well, you had the affair. It's all your fault. But yep. It wasn't all his fault, because if it takes two people to make a good relationship, it takes two people to create a bad one. And even if it's 50-50 or 70-30, whatever, I knew I was a player in it. And I knew that if I didn't address what was happening with me and my approach to love and relationships, I would probably replicate it.
Yes. You
know? Right. And, you know, out of the gate, you know, I didn't do so great originally until I just really got it, because, you know, those old patterns kind of stick with you, you know, even if you don't want to repeat them. So that was really the biggest thing of my divorce. And also to, you know, learn how to be a good co-parent living separately and how to manage the kids and work full-time again. Because I always worked, but I worked part-time. So going back to work full-time with two young children and doing it all myself and making like no money whatsoever and barely getting by was just, I learned that I'm stronger than I really thought that I was. And so those all felt very powerful. And also questioning for the first time, what do I really want? Because, you know, when I was younger, I was not one of those gals who dreamed of a wedding day. I mean, I just always assumed I was married and have kids, right? But I was a total hippie. And, you know, my first marriage, I dropped out of college to follow my boyfriend out to Colorado. And then he asked me to marry him and we got married and I wasn't even 21 yet. That was a starter marriage. So I just like followed along of what, you know, what they call the escalator, the script that women have, or that we all kind of have, what it quote unquote looks like. Yeah. And I questioned that at midlife because of the divorce. So like I say, I got two amazing children out of it and this wonderful life that I absolutely love from that divorce. So it was all good.
That's such a good story. What self-doubts creeped in during that transitional phase for you?
Well, I remember the first when it all imploded. And here I was 45. It took 3 years for all of the divorce and then therapy and everything to happen. I remember like crying, going like, why couldn't this have happened to me 10 years ago when I was younger and cuter? Who will ever love me now? Because I had internalized messages about middle-aged women.
Yep.
I internalized the messages that you are irrelevant and asexual and invisible and undesirable. And that was my first reaction, you know? And so I had to like, yeah, go, but I'm not, Like that didn't happen, you know? And so that was like a big aha moment, right?
That was one of my self-doubts too. And then here I was, you know, I don't know. You're just like, oh, I'm second divorce. That's already like a, there's an ex. Like,
damaged material.
The show with the exes. Wah, you know?
What's wrong with you? Why can't you keep a man, Wendy?
Yes, exactly. I mean, I thought there were so many things like against me coming out of the gate there that I was like, oh God, I'm just doomed. Like life is over. And you know what? I don't know about you, but now after going through that transition, which is so important, like that whole, that stage, that kind of that tweener stage, if you will, like, going through the divorce, and then you still have a little bit of recovery there. And then you start to kind of like, okay, starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like that stage is necessary. And it takes so much courage. I love what you said about the self-reflection, because I think that is number one. Like you have to, no, divorce or not, you've got to spend some time in self-reflection of, okay, where have I been? Not in a pointing the finger, like you said, shame, whether especially on yourself. If anything, the point of self-reflection is to look back at your past to go, what did I learn? What has helped? What has hindered? What can I learn from all of that, from that first chunk, that first half of life, and bring that goodness into the second half to really propel me forward?
Yeah.
Right. Because I mean, I always say, I'm like, I got my second divorce and I married myself. The best freaking marriage ever, you know?
I agree. Well, you know, look, Wendy, a lot of women don't give themselves space Mm-mm. in their romantic relationships. They Mm-mm. don't. And you know, I mean, I look at my second marriage, and the word wasn't even created then, but I was like a trad wife. I like did the cooking and the cleaning, and I worked part time. But this was the deal that we made. And you know, I really felt like I couldn't take time for myself. I had to be there for my kids, and
that would be selfish of you, Vicky, to do
I
that,
know.
Right?
How could I? You know what? I'm like, now, fuck that shit.
I know. It's like, I'm almost like annoyed if someone's taking too much. You know, my time. I'm like, no. I'm like, I need to go for a walk. I need time. You know, I'm like, no. Like, it's like now I feel like too. I mean, I'm sure it's like, I mean, I've had people pass away in my life. My actually first husband died at the age of 26. And then my brother died at the age of 49. And then as you get older, right, there's more like our parents are passing away. There's friends. There's, you know, like it's, you see death more and more. But to me, I see life more and more because it reminds me to quit effing around yes. and really live life to the fullest, whatever full means to you. Yeah,
it's really true. You know, I mean, a few years ago, I interviewed two authors who had that were local, who had written these like how to have a good death kind of books.
Mm-hmm.
These are not really about death so much right. as about how to have the good life before the death. And I think, you know, what we saw, especially in the past few years with the pandemic, how random life is mm-hmm. and how death can come at any time. You think I've got X number of good years left. And you know what? I mean, we could end this podcast conversation right now and I could pop off, you know, right. I'm pretty accident prone. By
yeah.
the way.
Yeah. And oh, great. You know, stay seated on that couch. Okay.
I'm holding on tightly. It's just, you know, you realize that it is a brief time.
Yeah.
And you know, that you are actually deserving of time to take care of yourself. You know, I don't know what your arrangement with your divorce, but my kids were a week with their dad and a week with me. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, having that week to myself was absolutely insane. I mean, I was still working. It's just that I could do whatever way I wanted. And I became a better mother because I wasn't just, I became a better friend. I became a better romantic partner. I was a better worker. I mean, everything was better. And I was like to joke, like, yeah, if you really want to have a great romantic relationship or marriage, act like you're divorced.
Yeah.
Give the kids, if you have them, to your partner and go, I'm out. And then come and get the kids back. And then they can come out. Like, do that. Because I really, you know, you learn that you have to self-care. I know that the whole self-care is like a big deal. I don't mean mani-pedis. I don't mean getting facials. I mean, all of those are lovely. I mean, take care of your body, your soul, your mind, and be kind to yourself.
I know. Oh, that is like key right there.
Yeah.
I didn't realize, like, when I had my whole midlife meltdown, if you will, how mean I was to myself. Like when I really, when we started talking before we hit record about like the voices in our heads, you know, and when I really started to listen, really, really tune in, it wasn't so much what was I thinking about others or things like that, or rehearsing things in my head, what I was going to say or et cetera. It was how I was talking to myself. And I was like, that shit has got to change. Because then I thought, okay, if my life had ended up the way that it had, which wasn't like absolutely horrible, I know, but to me, it's not where I wanted to be. And I was like, okay, if I'd been thinking this way and that thinking, since thoughts become things, then if that thinking brought me to where I'm at, I'm going to be like George Costanza on Seinfeld and do opposite day. I think, like, if you can, I mean, pretty much, if you think about it, we all brainwash ourselves. I mean, like, we are the ones that brainwash us into a positive, beautiful, loving human being, or we brainwash ourselves into a negative, hateful person, right? Like, it's our choice. And I think
it is.
That time of self-reflection for me and the journaling and the therapy and the whole nine yards, it was like, Wendy, like, you've always wanted to be like a total control freak. Now's your chance. Control that damn head. You know what I mean? Like, control those ugly thoughts that have gotten you nowhere.
Well, it's true. And, you know, I mean, to give our brain some cred.
Slack, yeah.
We as people, as human beings, the brain skews negative. That is the default. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's reptilian brain. That's brain fight or flight, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, is this going to eat me or kill me or what? You know. And so that is the first thought really that happens. Yeah. And we do that to other people when we judge other women, if they're, mm-hmm. you know, whether she's all Botoxed up or, you know, like, oh, she's not eating, whatever. Or we do it to ourselves.
Yeah.
What I learned is that, okay, you're going to have those thoughts. What do you do with them after?
Mm.
Do you continue the bad thoughts and the judgments? Mm-hmm. Or do you go, wait a minute. Why are you doing that? I tell a story in my book, I'm Not Too Old for That. And it does not reflect well on me. I went to go see, I know, because I'm, you know, I'm self-deprecating. I went to go see one of a singer-songwriter whom I loved for many years. She shall not remain named. She would not be named. And I'd never seen her before. And she came out on stage, and I love her songs. And my first thought was like, ah, my God, she looks so old and matronly. And she's like 7 years younger than I am. And then I was like, what? I like caught myself like, this is an amazingly talented woman with a huge heart, a big philanthropist who does all this social justice work. And I'm like, that is the first thing that you think about.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're trained that way, right? We're trained to like, let's look at the image.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. And so knowing that the brain will skew negative, we have to catch ourselves and go like, okay, had that thought, don't have to continue with that thought. Yep. I'm going to focus on the things that are positive now. You know, right. I'm just going to like let that, you know, when I was, you know, I don't know if you went to meditation after divorce, but I meditating, you know, anything to calm the brain. And, you know, and I was like saying, oh, it's so hard to let go of my thoughts. And my teacher said, just Vicky, think of it as like a little leaf, you know, floating down the brook and go, oh, there's Vicky having a thought. So do that with your negative thought. Like, oh, there's Vicky having a negative thought. Where goodbye.
Yes.
So yeah.
Yeah. You're like, it's, I know it's that, the science of being mindful and not judging the thought. Like, of course you're going to have negative, shitty thoughts. Just like you said, that our brains are attracted to that because it's a form of protection. Like, okay. Oh my God. We better run, you know? But then when you really take back that power and you can change those thoughts, like you said, and which does change your life, which does change those beliefs, which does squash the self-doubt. And, you know, and it really just empowers you to live a different life.
It does. And, you know, let's admit, it's not easy. Mm-mm. And it's an ongoing practice. This is something that you have to do. And I think something that I also started to feel more as at midlife and older is just really like gratitude. And I don't mean, you know, like you gotta get that quote of a day calendar or something. It just like take a moment to go like, I woke up this morning and I got out of bed and I dressed myself. Everything worked and I made my coffee and it's a beautiful day. And I'm like, I am so blessed to just be alive. Even though, yeah, there's money issues and there's all, the world is a shit show. So many bad things are happening. And yet, you know, there is some beauty and grace just to be alive and to be able to do what you can do. And so, you know, it's an everyday kind of, you know, thing of going like, today's a good day. I'm going to make it a good day. I'm going to do something. Yeah. I'm just going to, I'm lucky.
You do have to focus. You have to. Yeah. That's what I love about gratitude. And I try to get in better practice with that of the gratitude. But if I am having a really shitty day, that's usually when I will like, okay, it's time to practice some gratitude. Like, suck it up, buttercup. Like, things are not that bad. We can find some goodness in your life here, you know?
Yeah, and also, you know, you have to honor that we have bad days. And go, you know what? Yeah, that really sucks. And this is super hard.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, that was one thing with the grieving from my marriage, which I didn't even know you should have some grief and sadness for, you know, like I remember like the first time, especially like when my husband had died and we were already divorced and then he had passed away a few months after that. Right. But I was a single mom with two kids. I just started a business. I was waitressing like two other jobs just to like make it. And I mean, I really struggled, but I did not give myself the gift of grieving.
Yeah.
Because I'm not supposed to, I don't have time to be sad. I'm not supposed to be sad. I can be strong for everybody else. So I literally just skipped over it. Mm-hmm. And then what happens with grief, it'll creep back up when something else happens. And so when my brother died and then I got the divorce, the dog died. I mean, it was like, it sounded like an old country song. And, you know, and sure enough, like the death of my ex-husband creeped back up and it was like, oh shit. Like it was so much grief all at once. But what I told myself when I was actually headed to the hospital to see my brother, right, you know, he was in a coma, and I told myself, and I knew he was going to pass away. And I was like, you know what, this time you're going to give yourself the gift of grieving.
Yeah.
Because, and it was the greatest gift I could give to myself, as hard as it was, but getting through it, I learned so much about myself, and I allowed to the point is, is that I allowed myself to have a shitty day if I had a shitty day. And I wasn't going to pretend that I was happy. I was like, no, I'm pissed today.
Yeah.
Sad day. I'm going to get in my bed and cry all day long. And I'm not going to apologize for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And first of all, I want to say I'm very sorry for your losses. It's very hard.
Thank you.
Grieving is an important part of life. Yeah. And, you know, like you say, if we push that grieving aside, it doesn't really go away. It's going to manifest in other ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so yeah, of course, you know, you grieve, an end of a marriage is like, well, marriage was this thing that you have this romanticized view about. And of course, then you live it and you realize like, oh yeah, no, it's not like that at all. But it also is kind of like you think like, well, it's an end of a dream that I had. It's the end of something that I had. And who am I now? And, you know, we grieve a lot of things. We grieve losses all the time. And as you get older, you know, there's a lot more loss. And I think what happens when you get older is you have to come to grips with more and more loss. And I don't mean just death of people and beloved pets, but also loss of things that your body can do, what it looks like.
Yep.
You know, and also
good old menopause, man. I tell you, you know, I've done so many shows on perimenopause and menopause, and I'll admit, I didn't even know perimenopause existed until I started the show. I was like, what? Can you tell me about that shit? I thought I was going nuts. And I probably was, but you're right though. Like loss isn't just the relationships or death and things. You have losses of like, oh, the woman you thought you were going to be and realizing like, I got to let even that like go. And, but when you come to grips with it, like you said, and go, all right, that's done. What's done is done. You cannot change the past, but you can take that lesson and let it propel you more into the future and create a life that you love.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so like what I have in my book and what I feel very strongly is I want women to think of their older selves and go like, how do I want that woman to live?
Mm-hmm.
What life do I want her to have? And then take the steps now to make sure that you are loving to that future you.
Yeah.
Like I want women to do like what Lady Gaga did to Liza Minnelli at the Oscars a few years ago. She said, I got you. Like,
oh yes.
I want you to say to your future self, I got you. Don't worry. I'm going to make sure you are healthy enough. I'm going to make sure you are financially secure enough. I'm going to make sure I've got your back.
Yes.
You know? So I think
I think you end up becoming like your number one cheerleader, right? Like you have, and we're not used to that. We're so used to cheering for everybody else, for our kids and our spouses and our siblings and our friends. And then you're like, oh, cheer for myself. Hi, I'm Wendy Valentine, host of the Midlife Makeover Show. I started this podcast to help you navigate the challenges of midlife with grace, grit, and gratitude. Whether it's dealing with a divorce, changing careers, or the birdies leaving the nest, I've got your back. And hey, I've got your vagina too. As someone who has experienced the trials of menopause, I understand how frustrating it can be to be overwhelmed with hot flashes, brain fog, and joint pain. That's why I'm thrilled to introduce today's sponsor, Parlor Games, the leading ladies of menopause dedicated to saving the world one vagina at a time. Between their vibrant third cream that nurtures your brain, bones, and boobs, to their silky peach cream that relieves your dry, itchy vagina, Parlor Games provides the science, solutions, and sisterhood you need during menopause. As a listener of the Midlife Makeover Show, you can get 10% off your first order by visiting menopause.wendyvalentine.com and use code MAKEOVER.
Yeah, and you know, one of my favorite things which Margaret Mead, who of the American anthropologists, talked about was postmenopausal zest. Like, mm-hmm. you know, when you're through all of the menopause and everything, you know, you still got decades of life ahead of you. And it's like a lot of women just like really come into their own.
I know that I
can't explain to people, but you could look forward to that. That postmenopausal.
It is the bomb. I love it. I'm postmenopausal. Like postmenopausal. Yeah. But yeah, like I think also too, there was this like these misperceptions, these beliefs that of what life looks like after 50.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not like we are the new, I mean, to me, like the 50 is the new 20, you know, like it's not what our mothers went through. Totally different ball game.
No, because, you know, yeah. I mean, I have friends who are grandmothers and I think of my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And like, she looked like a little babushka, you know, because she was from Russia. And, you know, she looked like your classic grandma, you know, with the apron on. Come in, sweetie, blah, blah, blah. Let me make you egg cream. And then my mom, when she was, you know, at midlife and the grandmother, she looked pretty damn good. My mom was a beautiful woman. And I look at my girlfriends now and I'm like, what the actual hell? I mean, it was just like, and so, okay, now I know where I live. I'm in a bubble, like nobody around me. I'm in Northern California, just north of San Francisco. No one looks their age. I don't even know what that means anymore. And I know. That's not every woman's experience.
Yeah.
Many, many people with all sorts of ailments and disabilities and everything. I'm speaking as a white, abled woman.
Yeah.
Right? Heterosexual, cisgender. And I know that's not everybody's experiences. Regardless, there is that feeling that women do have postmenopause, where maybe a lot of their caregiving things have gone away, and now they're like, whether they want to or not, not everyone has children, but if you do and you're empty nesters, now you have to think about this new phase. What is that going to happen? So we all have, you know, this moment of like, oh, wow. Okay. Yep. Now
you do have to think about your future self. Like I think I try to live for my 90-year-old self. Like I want my 90-year-old self being like, girl, thank you so much for eating good and moving your body and taking care of yourself, because now I can still do that. Actually, my Aunt Annie just got here yesterday from Arkansas, and she is like my hero. She's turning 91. She is so cute and so fit and so healthy, but she has made her, she's not like a crazy extremist with health. I mean, a lot of them are out there, and no judgment. But you don't have to be that insane about being happy and healthy. It's not just eat good, move your body, have good friends, have good, you know, good conversations, do something good for yourself that fulfills you, take long walks. It's just, I feel like, especially being in this arena, if you will, in the self-help arena, between podcasts and books and social media, like I see a lot of it, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes we're all trying to like reinvent the human body, or, you know, like, go back to the basics.
Yeah.
And you don't just love yourself, love the life that you live, and make changes if you feel that you need to make changes. And I feel like we don't have to put so much pressure on ourselves.
No, it's
not about being the best. It's just about being you, period.
Yeah. And you know, there are a lot of things that you can do that don't cost money. You know, you can walk in a park if you are able to walk in a park, or, you know, or just being out in nature is very, very important. Mm-hmm. And that's free, you know, just out there, and gathering with people, you know, having connections, whether they're deep connections of friendships. I have a great group of women I call the lovelies. I've known them for, you know, some of them 30 years or more. But even the weak tie relationships, you know, the barista yeah. that maybe you see, or the bus driver, or when you're walking your dog, you seem the same person every day and you just have a moment of human interaction. All of those things are free and they feel very good and they ground you. They really bring you to your humanity. I recently started volunteering with the food bank here. And I will tell you that, doing something like that is so fulfilling. It's really feels, it's not like giving myself a pat on the back or anything. It's just, I'm interacting with people it feels meaningful, you know, it feels like, do good in the world if you can do good.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. giving can be so rewarding in whatever capacity.
We're all kind of walking wounded, you know, all carrying stuff in us. So any moment that you can share with another human being and have that human connection is very important, I think, for everyone's mental health, you know?
Yeah, they say even in the blue zones, like that one of the 9 key elements for these people that, you know, centenarians that live to 100, one of the things they all had in common was that sense of connection, the community, and also, you know, the volunteering, giving, like all of that. And the stuff that, and I feel like, I don't know about you, like the more you try new things and you leap out there, you join a group or help out at the food bank, something leads to another. Like that's one crumb that leads to another crumb that it's like, oh my God, I did not realize I liked this, or I didn't know that I was going to like painting, you know, watercolor painting and whatever it is. It's like, there's so many experiences that are out there waiting for all of us.
Yeah. And you know, that might mean sometimes you might have to put yourself in a situation that you feel uncomfortable in.
Yes, I know.
You know, I will say that one of the things that I learned from my divorce, getting back to one of your earlier questions, and aging, is that I am so much better now at living with not having all the answers.
Yeah. Oh, yes. The unknown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm feeling comfortable with uncertainty. I mean, look at the world right now. The world is chaotic. And I think we're always going to have this uncertainty and chaos in the world and maybe in our personal lives. And being okay, learning that it doesn't have to look a certain way, being open to possibilities and to be flexible in the way you approach life, you know, like, oh, okay, well, that didn't work out. Well, okay, let's try something else. You know, like scientists, you know, they don't get the things right away, you know, they try and try. It's a bazillion fails before something happens. That's like, bingo. And we shouldn't be afraid of failure.
I don't believe in mistakes, actually. Yeah. But I believe in retakes. Like if you feel like you've embarked on something like it didn't work out, it's not a mistake. Just pivot and do something else. Or like even our relationships, our marriages. So be it. That marriage I don't even like to say that marriage didn't work out. It did work out. It worked out the way it was supposed to work out. And I love that you.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that you said in the very, very beginning. And I say this too, because I really do feel it, so grateful for that divorce.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Vicky would not have really revealed herself to the world without that.
It's really true. And I hate when people talk about like a failed marriage or failed relationship. No, it's acknowledging that didn't really work out. We gave it our best shot, and for all the reasons, it didn't work out. And I'm thankful I had it. All of those things got us to where we are now, you know, I mean, right? I mean,
and it's such a great opportunity. I tried to during that time go, okay, this is an opportunity to really change your life. And I don't, you know, I feel like sometimes you do have to deconstruct your whole life to reconstruct a new life.
This is true. I mean,
yeah.
Consistently, what you find is like people who get to the depths, like they had a, you know, they had a death, or maybe they're drinking too much and like they lose their, I mean, like very often you have to go to a bottom or you get ill, you get a cancer thing, and then you get through it and then you go, wow, I learned a lesson there, you know, and then take that energy and move it forward. Maybe you learn gratitude there. Maybe you learn how strong you are. Maybe you make some changes in your life that feel better for you. So sometimes we do go to a depth to come out better on the other side, hopefully. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And you know what? A lot of people ask me when I, you know, how did you find the courage to take off in an RV across the country and start your own show? And I'm like, I didn't have the courage. I created the courage.
Yeah.
Everyone out there, just like you, like when you were taking those steps before your divorce, after your divorce, and even today, you create more and more courage. You're filling up your jar of courage. And just like you said, you're a lot stronger than you realized.
And I think I'm much more thoughtful about what I do now. Like I'm more intentional with the things that I'm choosing in my life, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I mean, they say wisdom comes with age. I don't know. Not all the time, but you can take all of your former experiences and also what you see around the world from you and decide, well, I don't want to do that. I want to, you know, try this. So yeah, being a little bit more intentional with things, because again, you know, time is precious and we don't know how long we're going to be here.
God, so, I know.
Yeah.
Like now with where I'm at, I can't get enough of life. I'm just like so hungry for more and more. And I know that, I mean, I plan to live till 111, but I mean, yeah, right. Oh my God, that was my old handle name. And when I went to school in Paris and I started a blog, and that was my handle name, was Go Wendy Go. That is so funny.
I love it.
Yes. But I forgot what I was gonna say. I forgot. I don't know what the heck I was gonna say. But I tell you what, I want to read something because I actually wrote this down before we started. And it's your book. I love the summary of it. I'll get to it here. Okay. So not too old for that. Who hasn't heard the stereotypes about women of a certain age? That's the age when women become invisible, irrelevant, undesirable, asexual, unhinged, dried up, hormonal messes. It's when women quickly slide into fragility and become forgetful, passive, weak, feeble, debilitated, disabled, dependent, and depressed. Or so the story goes. Not only are those outdated narratives sexist and ageist, they are also damaging to women's physical, emotional, financial, romantic, and sexual health. And it's time to change them.
Yeah, well, you know, it's true. Now, back in the day when we were an agricultural society and women had baby after baby after baby, yeah, probably by the time she's 60, she was quite exhausted and run down.
Yeah.
Because she'd spent most of her life being pregnant, nursing, raising, but we don't live like that anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
But those narratives kind of are still underneath the surface. Mm-hmm. And when we do internalize them, which of course we do, it actually impacts our mental health.
Yeah.
It impacts the choices that we make, mm-hmm. you know? It impacts us financially, sexually, all of that. It impacts us because we make decisions based on those internalized ageist, sexist narratives. And so we have to really fight back on that. Those don't fit who and how we live today. It just mm-hmm. doesn't. They're outdated.
So outdated. Oh my gosh. And boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so boring.
Yeah. And I, you know, but again, like with my singer-songwriter, you can slip back into that very easily. Yes. That negativity, like, yep. Oh my God, you look so matronly. My God. It's just allow yourself to realize, like, okay, I might have that negative thought. I might actually believe mm-hmm. that I'm, you know, undesirable and asexual because I'm saggy and I'm wrinkly. Yes. And everything. But it's like, okay, well, what are you going to do with that information? Are you really? Because look what happened during the lockdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't go get the Botox done and the mani-pedis and all of the things that we really think we need, because we're told as women, you got to be youthful and beautiful and this and that. And you, yep. if you're no longer young, you better find some way to gather it back again.
Yeah, exactly.
Do it. We couldn't yep. do it. Were we unlovable? I don't think so. I mean, we still had people who loved us yes. and we still lived our lives. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it wasn't the end of the world, really. Mm-hmm. We couldn't do all of that. And women especially spend a lot of time and energy and money trying to look anything mm-hmm. other than what we are.
Yep.
In this belief that we won't be lovable.
Yes.
And the thing is, we all have or had older people in our lives whom we loved and who we loved. And so we tell ourselves these stories because society tells us those stories.
Yeah. Look,
when you think about it, you are only, okay, society thinks like you're young and beautiful. And that means, you know, what? Your 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Leonardo DiCaprio, 25 is the max, right?
Yeah.
So that is like the teeniest, tiniest part of your life.
Yeah.
A decade.
Mm-hmm.
A decade.
Such a tiny part. I know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Even if you believe into your 30s. Okay. 2 decades of being quote unquote young. And then yes. what? 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. Yep. What's that? Poopoo caca? What is that?
Yeah. I know.
So.
And then, I mean, that's, I mean, think, yeah, exactly. And that's like the biggest chunk of your life.
Yes.
Is
yes.
those older years.
Yes, exactly. And so it's ridiculous to think that that is the only decade that matters.
No.
You know what I mean?
And you know what? In the 20s, oh my God, I didn't know what the hell.
I was stupid.
I was so dumb. I don't know what I was doing. I'm like, I don't want to be that. Yeah, to me, it's like I said, like 50s is the new 20s. This is where it's at. And not physically, I mean, energetically, spiritually, emotionally, like that's the good shit.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm in my 60s now, toward the end of my 60s, I'll be 68 this summer, which is, you know, I'm sliding into 70, which is a whole thought yeah. right there. And I have had like best time. I'm like so happy. And so those stories that we hear of what it looks like just is not really true. It's just not yeah. really true. And I think that, you know, I would love to, there's a very disturbing trend with very young women now who are like buying anti-aging things and everything.
Yes, I know. And, it's nuts.
You know, I like everything that we've been fighting about for women to like, you know, just stop.
I mean, look at the Kardashians.
Yeah.
I mean, my gosh.
I know.
I mean, are they not telling all the girls and the women out there are like, if you don't plump up every bit of your body, then you're just not worthy. And if you do all those things and look what you can become, it's like, no, you're so much more than your body.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So much more than all that crap. And even, yeah. So what? Yeah. Hormones can take over, as we know, but there's so many options out there for us that we didn't have. Like, our mothers didn't have that. I mean, my mother was taught like, okay, if the shit ain't working, you just get her hysterectomy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, we have come so far, like, as far as like that medical piece of it, like, we can take advantage of that. There's so many amazing supplements, all sorts of stuff out there that you can do to help with hormones and make you feel better. Right. And I want to say something too. I did a Deepak Chopra retreat. This was like years ago. And I'd met Deepak a few times, and cool guy, right? And so I remember, like, he wasn't supposed to be speaking that day, but he came into the room. He had these little fancy red Converse sneakers on or whatever. And he's sitting there, and he was only there for like 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes the simplest teachings can be the most profound, right? And most impactful, I feel. Sure. And I can remember him saying in his cute little Indian accent, he's like, you have to feel your way through life. And I was like, and at this time in my life, I was just going through a really shitty time. And I was like, you have to feel your way through life? I was kind of like, the hell does that mean? And I remember, like, I went to lunch, and then I was walking. I took my flip-flops off. It was in San Diego there, Carlsbad. And then I was walking around in the grass. And I could just feel the grass underneath me. And then I was like, well, that feels nice. And I was like, oh, feel your way through life. And I was like, huh. And but prior to that, I've always like been such a planner, a perfectionist, thinking through everything, every detail, not even making a step forward until I made sure that that step was going to be guaranteed to take me in the right direction. Right. So therefore, I didn't take a lot of steps forward in my life because I was too paranoid. Yeah. And then I thought, well, maybe I should start just to feel like what feels good to me. So point is, it's like, yes, imagine what you want. What do you want your life to look like? Yeah. But also, what do you want it to feel like? And you made the point earlier, like, that you're happy. Like, you want to just authentically and genuinely say, I'm happy. Like, I love who I am, and I love who I'm becoming.
Yeah. You know, I certainly didn't feel that way in my 20s. I was a very shy young woman who thought she was stupid and had nothing to contribute. And, you know, that was not true, but I'd convinced myself that that was who I was. And to realize, like, oh, no. You know, you weren't stupid. You were, you know, you learned. You were young, and you don't have all the answers. And I don't have all the answers in my 60s. It's just that I have questions. I know.
Yes. That is so right. That is so true.
I have curiosity. And I think that is very important, because that's how you learn. You become curious. You question. So when you hear those negative, sexist, ageist, you know, narratives, say, oh, really? Yeah. Who's saying that? Why are they saying that? Who's benefiting from that? Question, you know, question those things. And so I do hope that the really young gals who are buying into, you know, if there is anti-aging means you're dead.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, that is normal. Like, our bodies were made the way that they are. They're not supposed to be preserved all the way until you're sliding into the grave at 100 years old. Right. God, no, like, that would be weird. Like, we're not, like, let's face reality here. We're not, like, in the movie of The Cocoon. Remember The Cocoon movie?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yes, but oh my gosh, yes.
Well, I will say, I do admire a number of young people who are really out there fighting for climate change, fighting against, you know, gun violence. A lot of young people who are questioning, you know, gender and the romantic scripts. a lot yeah. of, I think Gen Z are saying they want to see more platonic mm-hmm. love in yeah. movies instead of just romantic love. So that yeah. gives me a lot of hope. Really, it does. That gives me a lot of hope that they're questioning, why are you telling us these stories? Why can't we have these stories? Mm. You know, mm-hmm. why don't I see myself and my friends, you know, more, you know, not non-binary, you know, just all, you know, people who consider themselves asexual and aromantics. And they're like, yeah, there's a whole mm-hmm. spectrum of ways to live right now.
And here's the thing though, too, I don't know about you, but like once you start to rewrite your script,
yeah.
what you want life to be like for you, what you want it to look like and feel like, you are going to get people that are going to push back. They are going to judge you, and you have to really stand your ground and mm-hmm. stand your ground because it is for your happiness and your authenticity. And it's because, I mean, it happens all the time. Like, I mean, so crazy you talk about scripts, but I mean, it's so weird, but my biggest haters on social media are men.
Well.
And it's because I feel that I'm a strong woman that's actually going after my life and making it my own and doing what I want to do. I speak what I want to say, whatever I want to say. Like, they don't like that. I just say they. I shouldn't put them all into a big bucket, right? But a lot of men do not like that because they are on that old script, that old narrative.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, there are a lot of men, not all. I didn't raise two young men like that, thank God.
Yeah, me neither.
There are a lot of men who fear an independent woman. And so, you know, yes. they will call us cat ladies or whatever negative thing that they can, because it's scary if a woman is a complete unit unto herself. And that doesn't mean necessarily that she wouldn't like a romantic partner at some point. It's just that she doesn't need one. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be dependent on and anybody. And, you know, for many, many, many years, women were kept from their money.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because money is power.
Yeah.
Money is power. When a woman has money, yeah. she has power. She can leave a bad relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Can, you know, do things on her own. And there are many people, and there are even some women who don't want that to allow some women to have power. Yes. And so, yeah, that is scary to some people. And I think what we're seeing with, unfortunately, with some of the younger generations is that the men are becoming much more conservative, which is also more gender role. Mm-hmm. And the women are becoming more liberal. Like, I'd like to control my own body. Thank you very much. So that is a bit of a problem. You know, mm-hmm. but why are some of those young men becoming more conservative and focused more on gender? Because it feels threatening that women are doing their own thing. And that's scary. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what, too? I mean, it's time for us to all stop sacrificing our own happiness and joy.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of that just as mothers, I feel like, and all for, you know, good reason, of course, but I sacrificed a lot of my own happiness for others. Mm-hmm. And even in growing up, like, let me put myself last so they can be happier and healthier. And then therefore they might love me more because of that, but it's not worth it. Good golly.
And so, I mean, to kind of touch upon my upcoming book on Live Apart Together relationships, what overwhelmingly it's women who would not like to live with their romantic partners. Uh-huh. And it's exactly because of the gender division of labor in part, and also because they can have their own place the way they want to, and they can have all of the things that they might want out of a romantic relationship, but just not 24/7 on their own.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So it's very, very interesting how it's particular popular with women of midlife and older, especially if they've lived with, I'm talking about heterosexual women, if they've lived with a romantic male partner before, a lot of them are like, yeah, you know what? Been there, done that.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it differently this time. Yeah.
I know. And I mean, it's so fascinating. And I feel like more importantly, you just have to take a look at yourself and ask what you want.
Yeah. 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 And you know, you may not know. Sometimes we just don't really know.
I didn't know.
Yeah. And it's okay to try something and say, yeah, I don't think that's what I want, you know?
Right.
But at least try it. You know, made a bold decision to get out of your comfort zone, maybe, and try something and go, no, not that. Or maybe, that. You will stay stagnant if you don't, you know, try
something, right?
Authentic life. Yeah. And, but like anything else, you know, mistakes may happen, and that's okay. You learn from them, you know?
Yeah.
And I think as we hit midlife and older, it isn't so scary to try something because we have a lot of life experience behind us, and we see how, you know what? Yeah, that marriage ended, or that relationship ended, or that job ended, or that friend disappeared. And you know what? I'm still here. And I'm moving forward. And I've learned from all of those losses and changes over life. Yeah.
Mm. This is such a good chat. I love it. I could talk about this stuff all day. Probably because it's so relatable with my own life. Let's see. Okay. So your book comes out July 9th.
Yes.
Yeah. Yay. Good for you. Boy, you have really changed your life, huh?
Well, I'll tell you. Even though my mom had lived apart from my dad, I didn't like even pay attention until like my midlife when I was like, what the hell was that about, Mom? When I divorced, and that was 20 years ago this summer, for the second time, I only knew that romantic script. But, you know, that romantic script wasn't going to work. I already had the kids and the this, and I had all of that stuff. There is no romantic script for you moving forward. But I still always thought I would live with a man again. And a few years after my divorce, I met someone and fell madly in love, and we were together for a number of years. And I would say, what do you think? We'll live together when the kids get a little older. And he was always like a little vague, and I'd be sad. And then the more and more that I lived apart from him, I more and more I realized like I like this. I like this. And so, but I was like an accidental live apart together fan. And I'm not saying that I will never live with a romantic partner again. The conditions will be different. It will be much more intentional. Maybe we have our own separate spaces, or maybe side by side. And I am the kind of woman who likes to have a romantic partner. I do. Yeah. I don't need one.
You know? Me too. I'm the same way. Yeah.
But I do. I like to have a romantic partner, and I've had a number of partners in the 20 years. And, you know, now when I meet someone, I'm pretty much like, yeah, you know, there will be no marriage and probably not even living together either. And are you okay with that? And, you know, but I don't say never, but I do make it clear that that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah.
And like I
said, you're trying it out, right? Just like you said earlier, you won't know unless you try. So it's like you try this out, and doesn't mean you can't pivot and change your mind later.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, especially for people who have maybe never lived on their own, maybe they went to family's house, to a dorm room, to living with a divorced boyfriend or whatever. I mean, you, Bell Hooks had a wonderful saying, like, you know, when you can experience being alone, and I'm just paraphrasing her, then you are available to other people. You know, when you have the power of knowing your own being by yourself.
Yeah.
It's very, very powerful. And actually there is a study recently that basically said, because more and more people are like delaying marriage or they're living solo for a while, they expect more from their relationships. They're much more intentional because they've lived by themselves, and they're not just going to accept the kind of relationships that, you know, maybe our grandmothers and mothers had, you know. Yeah. You're going to like go, yeah, you know, I want more. I want, more equitable partnership.
It's more conscious living, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Totally. More intentional, like you said, more mindful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where can we find you?
Oh God. I am on X.
You're everywhere. Yeah.
I'm on X. I'm on Threads. I'm ever so barely on TikTok, but I'm about to, talk about my book on that, because there's a whole community on TikTok of living apart together. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I have my own website, which is Vicki Larson. Otherwise, I usually go by OMG Chronicles. That was like my blog name, and now like,
oh yeah,
next. But and I write on Medium. You can find me on Medium, and and I'm yapping at all sorts of
basically, the best.
Shut me up. If you Google my name, it's like, whoa,
there she is. I know, it's so great. I'm so proud of you. That's amazing. Yeah, and it's V-I-C-K.
LARSON.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so yes, you can find me, and there's a way to contact me on my website, or you can DM me, and always happy to chat with anybody about any of these issues or more, you know. I'm open to all of that, you know, and I'm a big supporter I love men. I'm a big supporter of women, and I'm a believer in women supporting women. I think we're more powerful when we hold each other up and we support each other. And that is very important to me in my life. And it's a sisterhood. And so, you know, we should be kind to each other.
I know. Oh, I might have to make that audio clip like at the beginning of the show. Like, that was good. Thank you so much, Vicki.
Well, Wendy, this has been absolutely amazing. And I thank you so much for having me on the show. It's so wonderful to talk to you. And I'm wishing you and all of your listeners the best.
Oh, thank you so much. All right, everyone, have a great day.
Did this podcast inspire you, challenge you, trigger you to make a change, or spit out your coffee laughing? Good. Then there are three ways you can thank me. Number one, you can leave a written review of this podcast on Apple iTunes. Number two, you can take a screenshot of the episode and share it onto social media and tag me, Wendy Valentine. Number three, share it with another midlifer that needs a makeover. You know who I'm talking about. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Get out there and be bold, be free, be you.